The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
53106 if you want to get in touch. That's at a cost of 30 cent. And you may want to text us in relation to this next item because it relates to something that has the potential to be fairly contentious. A group of university staff from across the country are calling for a halt to the introduction of Flourish. Now, Flourish is the relationship and sexuality education resource developed by the Irish Bishops Conference for Catholic Primary Schools. In a letter to Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Education Minister Norma Foley, the academics argue that Flourish conflates education on relationships and sexuality with a religious perspective on the topics and could form negative views among children to some sexualities and some sexual identities. To discuss the subject further, I'm joined by Dr. Carolyn West, who is Outreach Coordinator for the Active Consent Programme in NUI Galway. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. Can you, for those unfamiliar, can you explain to us what Flourish is?
Yeah, that's a sex education programme for primary schools, when it really focuses on taking a Catholic approach to sex education. So that means sex is positioned as something that happens in heterosexual marriage. It doesn't happen outside of that. And there are slogans that we've seen in the media, such as puberty is a gift from God and sex is a gift from God. And obviously, you know, that's a very particular viewpoint, specifically for the Catholic religion. And, you know, we do live in a multi-denominational society now, and it's not as necessarily as applicable to all religions that may be in a classroom, but it's also not as applicable to all the different genders and sexualities that we now recognize. So it's, you know, very heterosexual. There isn't an inclusion of LGBT students as well. So we've known historically that LGBT students have said they always feel excluded in sex education in Ireland. So it just feels like, you know, it's 2021. We do need to be inclusive of everybody in the classroom.
Is there anything specifically negative in respect of LGBTQI?
They're just not mentioned. It's a very much a statement that marriage is specifically between a man and a woman. And we know, like, we live in a country now where same-sex marriage has been legal for a number of years. So it seems very unfair to exclude that portion of our population.
What do you make of the undoubted response, which would be that if it is a Catholic school with a Catholic ethos and Catholic patrons and largely Catholic parents, they can teach Catholic ideology?
I mean, it's obviously a much bigger conversation that we have time for than today, but we do live, again, in a society where not a lot of people may identify as practicing Catholic anymore. And there's high waiting lists, obviously, for places like Educate Together schools. So it would be nice if we were able to include all the people that went to these schools, because we don't have that much choice sometimes if the schools have a predominantly Catholic patronage, that we don't have as much, you know, free will to go to, you know, maybe a non-religious school or something like that. So, you know, we should be inclusive of all the students in a school.
There are a few subjects where religious ideology don't really have any impact, but sex education is one where the Catholic Church does now and always had has taken an active interest in defining how you should live your life in that respect. Will they therefore not say this is a bit like religious education, that if you don't share the Catholic ethos, you can absent yourself from this class, but that if you're in a Catholic school, we, quotes the bishops, have our right to inculcate Catholic beliefs and ideology?
I mean, you know, that's definitely one aspect that they could say. But on the other side, we can recognise that we're kind of in a bind here, that there isn't as much free choice as everyone else would like. So it's kind of not a very fair situation to be very inclusive to a lot of people. Now, I know a lot of secondary schools also have that patronage, but they are actually bringing in a lot more secular sex education, which is, you know, really nice to see that it's been a lot more inclusive. And you know, the students have really responded that, you know, the workshops that Active Consent are going to be doing in second level, 97% of the pupils said the workshop was relative to them when we're talking about sexual consent. So I think that's really, really positive, because we know that historically speaking, students have said that the sex education that they are receiving is either not relevant or not inclusive of them. So it is really nice that a lot of schools are having a bit more flexibility and are recognising that, you know, historically speaking, abstinence only heterosexual sex education hasn't necessarily produced, you know, very positive outcomes as well. You know, there's a UN report from 2018 and said the absence only education, sex education has been ineffective in delaying first sexual activity, whereas comprehensive sex education allows students, they actually delay first sexual activity, which is great because they feel a lot more empowered to make the right choice for them. And they're also more likely to use contraception as well. So that's fantastic to see. So I think we're getting there, and we are recognising that. And we do have a lot of schools that will be implementing the recommendations from the NCCA whenever they come out, hopefully at the end of this year or next year. So there is positivity out there. I think it's, you know, it's very easy to focus on the bad side of things, but, you know, there are huge changes being made, and a lot of schools are being absolutely fantastic at signing up to the active consent schools workshops as well. So there is a great amount of progress out there.
Do you find any gap between parental attitude in secondary and in primary level? Because I would have thought at first glance that you would have more acceptance of any kind of sexual education at that secondary, slightly older level than at primary, or are parents equally open?
I think a lot of parents need a lot of support around this. You know, we do live in a country where our parents didn't get that much sex education, and their parents didn't get it either. So, you know, when we see a lot of scary headlines about what kids are going to be taught and stuff, you know, we need to support parents and say, here, look, here's actually what's going to happen. I know Active Consent, we've worked with almost 400 parents on our skills workshop, and they've actually said they're really delighted with the content and the language that's used and the age appropriate level of the education that's used. So when we bring in parents as, you know, the primary educator of the child, and we bring in teachers as well, and we develop these resources together, I think parents feel a lot more comfortable with that also.
A text saying anti-Catholic bigotry again, not surprised, coming from probably lefty academics. Inclusive, that's a joke. The church is excluded all the time. We Catholics are entitled to our beliefs without being walked on by lefties. We had centuries of persecution, and it's going on again in our day. And that comes in from Joan. And 53106, by the way, if you want to get in touch with the programme. What of that argument, Caroline, that if you are a Catholic parent and you want your child educated with a Catholic view of sexuality, whether or not that is the right view, let's put that aside for a second. But if that's what you want, does doing this remove from them the capacity to have that delivered in their own schools?
Well, I mean, you can always educate your child in your home as well. You know, there's lots of really great resources out there for Catholic sex education if parents want to take that into their home as well and build on what's there in the school. But, you know, we do have to recognize that if we're not teaching young people about healthy relationships and about things like contraception, you know, we are living in our society now where there's a HIV infection every 18 hours, and we're currently living through a syphilis outbreak. So, you know, we're not teaching our young people how to protect themselves and avoid getting these diseases. We also live in a world where our young people are already involved in relationships that are considered to be violent relationships. There's the Rape Crisis Network report last week that said quite a lot of our young people in school are experiencing sexual harassment. So we do need to have education around things like sexual violence. And I know that may not be a comfortable subject, especially to recognise that our young people are experiencing that, because obviously that's not what we want. But we do need to have that, because it's happening. Our young people are having sex, and they're in relationships that are violent, abusive. And that's not the kind of world that we want to be living in, and not the kind of world that we should have for our young people to have to navigate on their own.
To go to the first of your points, though, about the AIDS and syphilis epidemic, will the Bishops' Conference not say that you both want to achieve the same end result, you just have different routes to getting theirs? Yours is to inculcate safe sex, theirs is to inculcate abstinence until marriage and then monogamy. Same end result, different route.
Yeah, I mean, both options are completely valid. The idea is that you can empower a person to make the right choice for them. So monogamy is absolutely valid. It's waiting for marriage to have sex, that's absolutely valid. Wanting to have sex as a young person but using contraception, that's absolutely valid too. There's room for everything. But it's the idea of, if we refuse to teach one thing, that's where we're missing our students as well. So comprehensive sex education would realize that, like, young people need to have all the options available to them so that they can make the right choices for them And that's where the issue is, that if we don't give them all that information, they can't make that right choice.
Texter says, I'm a primary school teacher and I cannot wait for the day that the church is no longer part of the education system. Religious influence has no place in sex education, particularly given the Catholic Church's poor record here. On a separate note, even when being interviewed, you're asked, how would you uphold the Catholic ethos even if you don't share or believe in any of it? Such an antiquated, irrelevant system. And that comes in from Surika. I suspect one of the issues that Catholics in listening to this, Caroline, will have is they will say if they weren't in the majority in the country, they would be treated different. So if they were a smaller or minority religion, now, the supposition might be incorrect, but I think there would be a supposition that would say they would be given more leeway to teach their kids and indoctrinate their children in their own religious beliefs. But because they happen to be the majority religion, they are treated as if they are irrelevant and meaningless.
I mean, that's probably a bigger conversation than what we have time for today and stuff. But I think, you know, everyone has the space to teach their children in their own way, in their own home as well. It would just be really great if everybody had access to the same resources and then they could make their own decision upon reviewing all those resources.
Another text says, the teachers and staff are paid by the state, not by the church. If the church wants final say on the curriculum, they should not rely on the state for any funding. To what extent in sex education generally, Carolyn, do you find that the schools take primacy or do the parents take primacy? As in, by the time sex education arrives in the classroom, do most of the children present already have their views formed by their parents, or is it news to them?
I think it's a bit of a mix because lots of parents have different comfort levels with what they share with their children and at what age also. The problem is we also live in a world where, you know, research from Active Consent has found that 10 to 13 year olds are watching porn on their smartphones. So they have a particular view of sex then as well. Yeah, which is not the world, again, that we want to live in. So, you know, we do have e-learning resources looking at sexual media as part of Active Consent and to empower students to go, you know, realize that this isn't real and this isn't necessarily what they should be engaging in. And, you know, so we need to talk about that too. But a lot of parents, you know, have been left without any support. You know, how do you teach your kid about porn? A lot of parents don't know the answer to that. But the good news is that, you know, through the work of Active Consent, we do support parents. We are launching a digital hub in a couple of months, and that will empower parents to access resources that are there. Recently, the last week, we saw the launch of Share Ireland, which has supports for parents also as well. So I think that's really important that there is support out there for parents, because obviously this is a very scary thing to try and talk to your kids about. And, you know, how on earth do you talk to your kids about sexual harassment? Or, you know, the pill and stuff might be a little bit easier, but things like, you know, domestic violence, like that's really difficult to talk to your kids about. So it's really great that parents have been really on board with the work that we do and have been open about it and, you know, interested in, you know, the language that we use and being inclusive in that way. So there is support out there for parents and really positive things happening to support parents.
A tricky balance I would have thought to strike, though, because on the one hand, if you take that instance of a child as young as 10 being exposed to pornography on their phone, you want to make sure that you are in ahead or at least coterminous with the child experiencing that with some level of support or education. But on the other hand, if you tell a child who hasn't had that experience, the child comes home and says, this is what I learned today, you'll end up with very angry parents.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why you bring the parents along on the journey as well. You know, a review of sex education by the UN 2018 said that, you know, when we are teaching kids about sex education, it doesn't, you know, make them want to go out and have sex. It actually has the opposite effect. They have sex at a quite a later age instead. So, you know, some people are afraid that, oh, if I talk to my kid about sex, they're going to run out and want to do it. And that's actually scientifically proven that that's not the case. So that's kind of good. But again, you know, the parents can talk to their school and say, what is the education available to us? And can we bring in outside resources that will talk about this? And, you know, the sexual media e-learning resource that we do does touch on that in a very calm, you know, comprehensive kind of way that parents can access there. So I think that's really important to remember that there is help out there. You don't have to go through this alone.
And briefly, Carolyn, do you know why that is the case? Because I would think that most people, if asked, would think, well, if you normalize a behavior by conversation and by information, you are more likely to have the individual partake in that behavior, whatever it is, rather than if it is seen to be something taboo. But the opposite is the case. Do you know why?
We're not 100% sure, because again, you know, especially in Ireland, we haven't had as much research in sex education as such as maybe perhaps international research. But I think it's to do with providing people with rights, and you're framing sex as a case of positive rights and negative rights. You have the right to say no, and you have the right to sexual pleasure, and you have the right to have access to things. So it does take away the element of, oh, this is something secretive. And, you know, so people don't view it as, it's not that big a deal then in that case. You know, it's not something I have to rush to explore. When you're empowered to think about sex in terms of consensual, healthy relationships, you know, you are a bit more empowered to look for things like red flags in relationships and what a green flag is and things like that. And so therefore, you're more likely not to rush into things. So I think, you know, it's that sense of empowerment that really kind of, you know, is a result of that delay.
Caroline, thank you very much. That is Dr. Caroline West, who is Outreach Coordinator for the Active Consent Programme in NUI Galway.